We were discussing the expression the chazakta of a yisal ish, the instruction that David gave Shlomo that you should strengthen yourself and be a man. We had various different interpretations. I'd like to continue now with the Rabag's interpretation. The Rabag says the chazakta of a yisal ish means that you should behave like an ish, not like a child. The chazak to bislish means you should be shal etza. You should ask for advice. Because the only way that you could possibly achieve this goal of a yisal ish, of acting in a appropriate, mature manner, is with advice. Even though Shlomo was quite a smart fellow, and in the end he became a chacham mikol adam, but the only way to really achieve success, to really do the right things, is by being shal etza. There are a number of reasons for this. First of all, Alpi Musar, a very simple reason is that people have biases and negios. Everybody has their own set of biases, things that are driving them, motivation, sometimes conscious, sometimes unconscious, but people have things that they want in life, and you tend to view things in accordance with the way you would like them to be or the way you think they are, and these biases distort a person's judgment, and no matter how smart you are, you're still subject to the influence of biases. And that's why you have many issues confronting mankind. People are very intelligent and opposite sides of the issue, being very vehement on their side, they don't hear the other side, because biases distort your judgment. And Shlomo Melech, as smart as he may be, is not immune to that. But if you ask Eitzah from other people, since each person is different, so each person's biases are different too. So the things that blind you might not blind the other fellow. And therefore, Berov Eitzah Sushia, by asking a lot of advice and a lot of opinions, you will be able to uncover the truth. You have to be honest enough to get past your biases. Right. Some people are so biased that even when somebody tells them the truth, they don't hear it. It doesn't make sense to them. They see it their way. Sometimes it's a little milder. A person's in better control, and you don't think of it yourself. It distorts your own thinking, but when somebody else tells you the truth, you're willing to recognize it. So you have to be at that level, but but to be able to rely on your own judgment exclusively is not likely to be successful. So you need to ask Eitzah because of Negios. There's also something I think very simple and nothing to do with Negios, but you just may not think of everything. Many issues are very complicated and very complex, and you simply, being a human being with finite abilities, no matter how smart you are, Chacham Mikol Adam, you just don't think of everything, and somebody else might think of an angle that you didn't think of, even if that person is not as smart as you. Again, people's minds work differently. It could be lucky, whatever it is. You think this happened to occur to you, this happened to occur to the other person. So in order to get the full range of opinions, you need to be shal etza. In fact, there's an interesting Das Akenim Bali Tosfos that says, actually it's I think it's this week's Parsha, that says that by Sodom, so we all know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avram that he was going to destroy Sodom, and Avram engaged in kind of lengthy negotiations with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he was bargaining down, whether it's 50, 45. He worked HaKadosh Baruch Hu down to 10 tzaddikim be'er, and then he stopped. So why did he stop at 10? So the well-known explanation is the one that's brought down in Rashi, that he had already learned from previous world history then less than 10 was not going to cut it. Because in the Dora Mabul, you had 10, sort of, really, and you had less than 10, rather. He had 8, really, but he knew that 9 was included in his request for 10. So he saw it didn't work, so it's not going to work now. There's no point in asking for something which history has already proven that Kodesh Baruch Hu would not grant. That's a very well-known explanation. But the Das Akenim has a different explanation. The Das Akenim's explanation was that Avraham Avinu figured he won. If I got 10, I'm okay. He says, why? Because I have Lot and his wife, his four daughters and their husbands. So that's 10. So I know there are 10 tzaddikim in the city. I'm okay. So Avram's calculation was off by approximately 10. Maybe 9.5. Because Chazal say that even Lot was really only saved through the schus of Avram. He was a kind of he had some aspects of him that was taka very good, but he also had aspects that were quite bad, and he himself wasn't even a tzaddik. Now, that Avram thought he was a tzaddik is not such a big kasha, because he was at one time. Right? Avram raised him, and at a certain point in time he was, and he deteriorated. And it could be a lot of that deterioration took place after he left Avram. Some of it may have started right away, but you know, it's understandable that Avram could think that. But so, because so, Avram knows that people don't necessarily remain the same, and you know, Sodom is not a great environment. To be so sure that Lot and his wife were tzaddikim sounds a bit far-fetched. Not only that, he didn't know who the sons-in-law of Lot were. He's just assuming that, you know, Lot probably would have picked a good son-in-law. Well, who knows? Maybe there was nobody to pick. So, why did Avram think that there were 10? And I think you have to say is that he had a certain image of Lot. There was no negiah. Avram didn't have a negiah to bias to think that they're tzaddikim. He just had a certain image of Lot in his mind, and it didn't occur to him that it could change, that it could be different. So sometimes we just don't see the alternatives. It just didn't occur to us. If somebody would have pointed it out to Avram, he would say, you know, you're right. Not so sure. Maybe there aren't 10. Let me go for the 8, for say whatever, see what I could get from my Kaddish Baruch Hu. So the second aspect of the need for Eitz is simply that we don't think of everything. And I think there's a third aspect. You might say it's included in the first, but it's sort of a little bit different, and that is there is a sort of a built-in negiah, if you will, that people don't question their own ideas. Gemara calls it Ovid Inish Lachzuke B'dibure. A person has a tendency to remain firm with his own words. There's a halachic application of that principle, and the principle is as follows. Very interesting halacha. This applies only in death penalty cases. We are very, very careful about improper convictions. If a bezdin convicts a person for a chi of misa for a death penalty, and then new evidence arises, new edim show up, and it's necessary to reopen the case, because that's halacha if he is convicted, but new evidence comes, then you reopen the case. You have to have different judges, because the judges who convicted him beforehand will have a certain predisposition to convict him again, because people like to stick with their own way of thinking. So if you happen to think of an idea, just because this is the first thing you thought of, it's going to be very hard for you to question yourself. I must admit that I discovered this firsthand with my own experience. When I was in yeshiva, we have, you know, one of the aspects, the things we have to do in yeshiva is to say a chabura, where you work on a sugya and try to say your own chiddush, to explain something, to align something. And more than once, very often, I remember situations where I was working on a chabura and I had my own idea of how to explain a certain sugya, and somebody else in yeshiva was also working on it, same sugya, and he might tell me what he was saying. And as soon as he told me his pshat, I came up with 3 or 4 kashas. I was giving him a hard time, this question, that question, the other question. I walked away and said, you know what? Those questions are questions on my pshat too. But somehow I didn't think of it. The moment somebody says his pshat, all of a sudden you start thinking of all the questions. That's Ovid Inish Lazuke B'dibure. That's the way human mind works. There is a Chassam Sofer that says a very sharp line, despite which I think is probably to some degree true, and you'll see what I mean in a moment. He says, Rov Harifus Sheker. Most sharp answers are false. The Rov Dechukim Emes. And most Dochuk answers are true. He says, why? Because when a person thinks of a sharp answer, he likes it. It's a nice answer. He will not question himself anymore. So what are the chances that you happen to take a stab and come up with the truth? It's possible, But al pi rov, the first thing that comes to your mind in a deep, complicated sugya is not necessarily going to be true. But since it's nice and sharp and clever, so you don't question it, and avid nishtav sugya v'dibure. But if you say a dolchek answer, you really don't like it. It's a dolchek answer, so you're not satisfied with it, so you question it. Maybe I can come up with a better answer. I'll try this, I'll try that. And you only stick with the answer when everything else fails. So there's a much better chance that it's the truth. So a person has this automatic tendency, what he happens to think of first, he likes, and therefore cannot see other views. So it is necessary to be shol eitza, because somebody else may not have thought of that first, and therefore will be able to ask you all the questions that you yourself would not have thought of. It's very interesting how far Chazal take this principle, how important it is to be shol eitza. Chazal say that if you have two people who agree on the course of action, they still have to be shol eitza from each other. Even though they've reached the same conclusion, and we find two examples of this, maybe there are more, but two that I'm familiar with where they are criticized. And one of them is the case of Shimon and Levi. It says, Vayikach Shimon v'Levi ish charbo, each individual took his sword. So the Medrash says they were not shol eitza from each other. They both came with a conclusion, let's kill out Shechem. Right, Shimon said, we should kill out Shechem. Levi said, I was thinking the same thing. So they took their sword and they went and they did it. But they didn't ask you, why should we do it? What do you think? What do you think? The implication of the Medrash is that if they would have discussed it with each other, it's possible that they would not have done it. In a similar vein, we find by Nadav and Avihu, it says, Ish Machtaso, each one took his firepan with the Ketores. So they both came to the same conclusion, that they should bring this Eish Zara, this Ketores, into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but they didn't discuss it with each other. So even when two people have reached the same conclusion, they still need to discuss it with each other. Why? One reason is, I think, that the mere act of discussion sometimes reveals the weakness of your arguments. You could think something in your head, but when you have to say it over, you know, you begin to detect its weaknesses. In fact, I once got advice from an Adam Gadol that I was complaining that because of my erratic schedule, it was very hard to have a chavrusa. If I wanted to learn, I had to find time here or there to learn, but I always had to learn by myself without a chavrusa, and there's a big problem. You don't have another person to take care of all these problems. So he said that an idea that helps somewhat is to write it down. When you think of an idea, write it down. Because when you write it down, you begin to see, you know, you have to express it, put it in words, you write it down, you begin to see some of the weaknesses. I joke with my shir, I do that today too, and I write down, sometimes I bring it into shir, I read from my notes, I say, this is what my chavrusa said. But I don't know if I agree with him. But the idea is that just the process of having to explain yourself sometimes makes you realize the weaknesses. And the second fact is, the fact that two people reach the same conclusion doesn't necessarily mean that they reached it for the same reasons. There's sometimes more than one way of arriving at a conclusion. So everyone has their own biases, everyone likes the ideas that they thought of, but in the course of a discussion, you might say, Shimon will say, let's kill out Shechem because of this reason, because of that reason, and Levi will say, that's not a good reason. You know, what about this, what about that? But I think we should kill Shechem for a different reason. To which Shimon would say, that's not a good reason. And they may end up deciding not to do it. So the fact that two people have reached the same conclusion doesn't mean that they have the same arguments. And if they don't have the same arguments, then you have the same checks and balances. If there are biases, if he didn't think of certain questions, he didn't think of certain angles, or if he likes his own ideas, whatever it may be, you have the chance of clarifying it and ending it. So therefore, even when two people think that they agree, it's kedai to discuss it with each other. And in the course of that discussion, they may find out that they don't agree, and in the end, they may change their minds. There's another message in this Ralbag that is so fundamental and so important in our approach to life. I think it is, every so often you have one of these sources, which really is a fundamental guidepost on how to conduct your life. And it's buried in this simple little Rabbah. Okay? We understand, I think, I hope, why it's so important and why the idea of being Shaul Eitza and asking for advice is so significant. But let's look at the words of the Pasuk that the Rabbah is describing. The Pasuk doesn't say ask advice. The Pasuk says V'chazakta v'hayish aliyish. That means the Rabbah is equating the idea of chizuk, of strength, of being a man, with asking advice. What's the connection? Right there. You know, we usually think of it the other way around. You know, a guy is a tough guy, be a man, chazakta, ish leish. I don't need anybody's advice. I'm going to go ahead and do what I want to do and do what I have to do, and nobody's going to stop me. All right, you might argue he's taka, very strong, chizuk he has, ish he has, seichel maybe he doesn't have. So you could say it's not wise, but what do you mean to say that it's not strong? The chazakta ve'yish leish. And the Rosh Yeshiva explained that fundamentally the real reason why people do not want to listen to advice is because of their own insecurities. It's because of weakness. When you see a big tough guy who doesn't want to listen to what anybody tells him, and he's going to go ahead and do what he thinks is right, and nobody's going to stand in his way, you should know that that person is a weakling. It means he's insecure. He's afraid that if he were to listen to somebody else, then somehow he would be diminished. It would be a confession that I'm not the greatest. It's a defense mechanism. People feel insecure. They've got to, I know what to do. You've got to counteract. If a person is truly secure, then he does, listen, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. That's fine. Somebody tell me advice, I'll listen to somebody else. I don't feel that it diminishes me, because I have confidence, I have strength, I know who I am. And therefore, I have no problem accepting advice. So it requires chizuk, it requires strength to accept advice. And a person who doesn't is a sign of weakness. Now, of course, there's scales, you know, we don't have 100%, 0%, you're usually someplace in between. Some people will sometimes accept advice, not other times. It depends, you know, how close to home it hits. You might have particular situations where a person doesn't want to accept advice because he wants a certain result. In which case, his problem is really not that he doesn't accept advice, it's just that he wants to do something. A person wants to do an aver in his heart, he knows it's an aver, he knows what everyone's going to tell him, so he doesn't ask advice. That's a different problem. But you have situations where a person doesn't have that kind of circumstance. It's just, you know, he thinks his way is right and he won't listen to anybody else. When that happens, it's because of internal insecurities. And in a related concept, I heard this from Rav Palm, that he explained once that, you know, people have a misconception and they think that a humble person, an anav, is a weak person. It probably comes from Christianity. That's my guess. Meek, you know, turn the other cheek. You're a very weak person. And the truth of the matter is, it's exactly the opposite. And he said that if you look at some of the examples of the most humble people in the history of mankind, so Chazal tell us three names. Everyone knows number one. Number one, the Torah itself says, Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu was not exactly a wimp. Moshe Rabbeinu was ready after the Chet HaEgel to stand up in front of all of Klal Yisrael and say, Mila Hashem Eli, and no problem. Take him on. Moshe was ready to go into the palace of Paro. Oh, no problem. That doesn't seem to be such a weakling. Number two was Avraham Avinu. Moshe was number one because he said, Mi Anachnu, who am I? I am nothing. Avram said, Anochi Afar Ba'efer. But Avram is ready to go to war against the four kings. Not such a weakling. Number three was David HaMelech. David HaMelech also, you know, was a leader. Kaisel went to war about. He wasn't such a weakling either. Rapam explained it's the same mentality. It says gaiva comes ultimately, Rav Shiva said the same explanation of gaiva, from insecurity. When a person has a certain insecurity and doesn't really appreciate the gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him, he's got to make something up. It's a defense mechanism. I begin to think I'm great. But you know what the problem is? The problem is, if you think you're great because of what you accomplished, then you become a nothing if you fail. Because everything is you. So your successes are your successes, but your failures are your failures. So you become afraid to fail. That's the source of most weakness. I'm not going to take action. I'm not going to do anything. What if it goes wrong? How do I know I'm going to win? But a person who's an anav doesn't attribute his successes to himself but to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore he doesn't take the failures. The failures don't reflect on himself either. If I did the right thing, I did the right thing. If I failed, I failed. Nobody ever saw guaranteed success in life. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the cheshbonos. So you become very powerful. The source of chizuk is anova. The source of chizuk is the realization that I am what I am, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me certain gifts, and I'm not what I'm not. And therefore, I can't think of everything, and I am subject to the same biases as everybody else is, and therefore I need to listen to advice. And if I accept that advice, I'll be better for it. And it doesn't reflect in me, because everyone else is the same way. I don't have to worry about that. That's what we are. We're a human being. I'm a mensch. And if I have to do something, I'll do it. And if there's no guarantee of success, so there's no guarantee. Then maybe I'll fail. So what? What power that is. What strength that is. So it's a very fundamental principle in life that we should not delude ourselves, whether it's us or another guy. It's always easier when it's the other guy. But we find ourselves unwilling to ask advice or unwilling to listen to advice, we have to question ourselves, is that strength or is that weakness? When we begin to understand where that comes from, we have a whole different attitude on life. And we'll be able to listen to advice and we'll be much stronger for it. We'll be able to do what we need to do. And we won't be so hung up. So what if we fail? By the way, many people fail, but they keep at it and eventually they succeed. Very few successes come about in the first try. So in the end, even in this world, you end up ahead of the game. But the fact of the matter is, true chizuk, the chazakta v'yisaliyish, is to be shol eitzah. Not be afraid, I'm not worried. If I made a mistake, I'll change. That's strength. But if you're insecure, you can't do that. The pasuk continues. V'shamarta es mishmeres Hashem Elokecha. You should observe the mishmeres of Hashem. The message of Hashem, the words of Hashem, that which He told you to observe. The Mitzuda says that the message of this phrase was that don't rely on your own understanding of things, rather you should rely on the Mishmeres Hashem, rely on the Mesorah, rely on what you learn from Hashem. There'll be Nascha al Tishan. Do not rely on your own understanding. Ultimately, that was Shlomo's downfall. Shlomo became too confident of his own understanding and felt that he had the ability to limit or to change the laws of the Torah, thinking they didn't apply to him. So this warning, perhaps David recognized that tendency in Shlomo and gave him this warning, according to the Mitzudas. Unfortunately for Shlomo, it didn't quite work. We'll have to examine in a little more detail when we get to that. Shlomo is a very, also many of the figures in Tanakh are not so easy to understand. We have these simplistic views of it. If you read the Psukim, Shlomo seems to have deteriorated into great chait, and there are such opinions actually. But on the other hand, you know, when we say a Mishaberach for a Chola, which is Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, David, or Shlomo. So we obviously are not viewing him as a great sinner, if we're invoking his chus on behalf of a chola. So we'll see exactly what went wrong and what Shlomo was all about. But whatever it is, something did go wrong to some extent because he relied on his own understanding. And this was the warning that, according to the Mitzvot, at least that David gave, not to rely on your understanding. Lolechas bidrachav, to go in his ways. And we're going to have a series of descriptions of the mitzvahs of the Torah, chukim, mitzvahs, mishpatim, edus. We'll see what each one means. But before that, we have lolechas bidrachav. And the Radak explains that lolechas bidrachav refers to midos. Mahu rachum af atarachum. As Chazal say, v'alachta bidrachav, that's what it means. You should be merciful, you should be gracious, you should be patient. The various different midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I assume the reason why it's mentioned first is, as Chazal say, derech eretz kadma l'Torah. That prerequisite to success in Torah is midos, is derech eretz. This is also connected to Mishmeres Hashem, and I think that's an important concept as well, that although midos in general tend to be logical, things that we could figure out ourselves, still we need to learn it from Hashem. Mefarshim say that there is a brief description of the Mesorah of Kal Yisrael in the beginning of Pirkei Avos. And Moshe Kibal Torah Misinai, Mesorah Yeshua, Yeshua Zakenim, Zakenim Levim, etc. One would have thought that if you wanted to describe the Mesorah of Kal Yisrael, that would be at the beginning of Shas, the beginning of Maseches Brachos. Why is it in Maseches Avos, which is a good chunk of the way through Shas? And the Mefarshim explain that a point is being made, because everyone understands that the what you might call the religious, quote unquote, mitzvahs of the Torah, Kriya Shema, Brachos, you know, Zrayim, Maestris, Trumas, Yantav, Shabbos, these things we learn from the Torah. But Pirkei Avos deals primarily with midos. So midos, I figure out myself. You know, the Chachamim maybe are smarter than me, so they have greater insights than midos. Fine, I'm willing to accept that. But it's human intelligence, it's human understanding. So the Mishnah makes a point, Dafka, of mentioning the Mesorah in the Masechta of Midos, to tell you Midos, you also need a Mesorah. Because although the basic ideas are true, it's true that there's human understanding, but the true nature and extent of how Midos work and how they interact with each other when there are conflicts, and where you draw the line and how you balance it, require a Mesorah. The deeper, more profound and nuanced understanding of Midos requires a Mesorah, requires a revelation from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I just give you one little example, but there are hundreds. I think there is no moral, ethical system in the world that doesn't acknowledge that honesty is a Midah Tova. You've got to be truthful. What does honesty mean? I think the Torah's concept goes far beyond anything that human logic can dictate. And there's a one example. There's a Sephardim, also in this week's parsha. Look at that. I didn't even plan it that way. That by the Akedah, at the end of the Akedah, so we find that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avram not to shecht Yitzchak. So Avram got the aisle instead. Why? Shem told him not to shecht Yitzchak. Go home. So the Sefarno explains that the reason why Avram felt that he wanted to bring the aisle is because of Dover Emes Bilvavo. A person should be honest even in his heart. He had come to this mountain with the intention of bringing a sacrifice to Hashem. That's what he was planned to do, and that's what he had decided to do, and he's going to leave without doing it. That would be a lack, to some extent, of honesty. This is what the Torah views as honesty. Dover emes b'lavo. That's not a concept that human intellect would be able to come up with on their own. If you think of an application of that, that means if you intended to do somebody a favor and he didn't need that favor, right? You were going to get coffee from the coffee maker, and he said, I'll get one for you, and then You look around, you see he already has his coffee. If there's something else you could do for him, you have to do it. You should do it, because otherwise you're not really being fully honest to the nth degree. So there are concepts and nuances in midos that we need the Torah to teach us. We can't figure out on our own. Me'iduk isa, we have to know the limitations of a midah. What's popular in modern Western culture is that it's perfectly okay to insult somebody or to badmouth somebody because if it's true. Right, that's the automatic defense. I have to be honest. Sometimes they think it's a mitzvah. I have to tell you what I think of you because otherwise I'm not being honest. I have to tell other people what I think of him because otherwise I'm not being honest. But we know there are rules of Lashon Hara. Rules of Lashon Hara apply even if it's true. The rules of Onaz Devarim, of hurting a person with words, even if it's true. If there's a constructive purpose in telling the Lashon Hara, then you have to do it. But if it's just Kanos HaEmes, forget about it, if it's for negative reasons, I want to hurt him, then obviously it's not allowed. But even if it's just Kanos HaEmes, I want to tell the truth. Generally speaking, you know, that's prohibited. Now, there are certain perhaps circumstances where it's not. You know, it's about lachas, about pitlasa. But the etzem, the fact that something is true, is not a heter to say it. I used to have a Rebbe in high school who used to say to us, everything that you say should be true, but not everything that is true should you say. So you need to know where the limitation. On the one hand, how far honesty goes, and on the other hand, where it's limited. Where you not to be used. And the same argument can be made in many midos, in many different aspects, in many different ways. So therefore, the halachta, lelechaz bidrachav, midos are also learned by imitating Hashem, not by using merely by using our own intellect and our own understanding. There's a place for our understanding, because you have to use that to analyze the Torah and your starting point, but it's not enough, and it's not sufficient. The Ralbag, on this expression, Vishamarta es mishmeres Hashem elokecha lelechaz bidrachav, has a little different twist. He says, Vishamarta es mishmeres Hashem refers to Limud HaTorah. And the Limud HaTorah has to be behizbonunus, with great understanding, and moreover, it has to have a particular goal in mind. Vishamarta es mishmeres Hashem elokecha, Lolechas bidrachav, in order to go in his ways. That means your intent when you're learning Torah should be in order to fulfill it, in order to go in the ways of Hashem. And there are really two messages in this Rabbag, both of them very fundamental. Number one is the idea of izboninus. The Shamartes Hashem Hashem Elokecha, he says you have to learn be izboninus with great understanding, concentration. This is an aspect of that's somewhat sometimes overlooked. And by the way, he's not referring here necessarily to learn with great hisbonenus in order to have a deeper understanding, to become a big lamdin, to become a posek, to become a gadol. Right? Then one gets into the debate and the argument that there are halimud, you know, bekiyus and iyun. He's not really discussing that. He's talking about carrying it out in practice. Lishmar Chukosa, mitzvosa, mishpata, veidosa, kakosa, v'taras moshe. So in order to carry out the mitzvahs in practice, you need to learn bi'iyun. And I believe what he's referring to is a concept that's elucidated by Rabbi Sol Salanter, and said that one of the most powerful tools that we have to translate what's written in the Torah into action is learning bi'iyun. When you learn something bi'iyun, study it intensively, it becomes a part of you, and then it's much easier for you to carry it out. If somebody were to just come and give you instructions, this is what you have to do, X, Y, and Z, is very nice, that's what you have to do, it doesn't mean you're going to do it. But if you figured it out with all the makoros, and you worked on it, and you have a deep understanding, and this is what you're supposed to do, you're much more likely to do it. One of the most powerful weapons in Musar is Iyun, is learning. In fact, in Slobodka specifically, the idea of the Musa Shmuz was really part of this process. You know, many places, and commonly people use the thing of Musa Shu'us as inspirational. Somebody gets very dramatic and inspires you and so on, and you know, we need inspiration too. But inspiration has a very big problem. It has a very short shelf life. Inspiration wears off very quickly. And again, if we want to take this week's parsha, as long as we're beating it to death, there is a Yalkut Shimoni at the end of the parsha. Yalkut Shimoni says, you know, that the ram that Avram was going to shecht was running towards Avram, and it got caught in the bushes by its horns. Yalkut says this was the Satan. The Satan was trying to stop the ram from reaching Avram, so Avram will have to go get it. Why was the Satan bothering with that? Do you think the Satan thought that if Avram has to take 15 steps to go get the ram and disentangle the ram from the bushes, that therefore he's not going to do it? But the fact of the matter is, Avram Avinu was tremendously inspired. And a mitzvah that's done with that intense feeling and inspiration is a great mitzvah. Avram, the Satan felt, if I could slow him down 10, 15, 20, 30 seconds, the intensity is already going to be diminished, and it'll be less of a mitzvah. The Satan knows something that we often don't know, that it's not an all or nothing at all proposition. Right? If I can't win the battle entirely, he tried that too. He did try to stop Avram from coming to the Cain in the first place. You know, right? It didn't work. But partial victories are also worthwhile. So if I could take the air out of Avram's bubble, let that enthusiasm level diminish a bit, it's also worth my effort. Apparently it didn't work, but that was Avraham Avinu. But the fact of the matter is, the Satan had a havamina, so to speak. It was a realistic possibility by delaying Avraham Avinu by 30 seconds, some of his enthusiasm would be diminished. So inspiration wears off very quickly. By the way, it's important that when a person is inspired to do something about it, because the effect of what you do or what you learn doesn't wear off so fast. So you need to take advantage of the inspiration before it passes by. But in Slobodka, the focus of the shmooze, and that's really how we do it here in the yeshiva, is that it should be iyun. So the shmoozim were subjected to the same type of rigorous analysis that learning a tosis was subjected to. And you would say a chazal or a rishon or whatever it is, and derive and say pshat and musa concept, and you had to be able to defend it, and you would argue about it, and how do you know this is pshat, maybe that's pshat, and how do you explain it, and when does it apply, and when does it not apply, and how far are you going, and it turns into an intellectual process of iyun. So learning be'iyun makes that musa part of you. That's at least part of the motivation, part of the idea of the way they at least did it in Slobodka. Whether that's what you do with your shmuzin or not, but it definitely is an important factor in terms of the growth and development of a person. And this idea, you know, that the iyun becomes part of you, is I think what the Rabbag is alluding to by saying by learning b'is bonenus, it will be lishmar v'lasos achukim and mishpatim, etc., etc. The second thing that the Rabbag discusses is your intent. That you have to learn in the first place for have maximum effect. Of course, we know mitoch shelo lishma balishma, that if a person learns Torah or even does mitzvah shelo lishma, it can be helpful. But to reach the maximum effect, you know, David HaMelech wasn't interested in second best for Shlomo. He was telling Shlomo how to do it right. To reach the maximum effect, it has to be with the intention to do. And that's what Torah lishma is. And I don't know, I'm not exactly sure whether, you know, what they mean, and people throw out different sources, but ultimately, it seems that the true definition of Torah Lishma is Lilmud Amanas Lasos. That's what the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says. Mishnah in Pirkei, at least the way most of the Mefarshim explain, Rav Eniona, Bar Tanura, others, that Halomed Amanas Lamed, if a person learns in order to teach, so Maspikim Biyad Lilmud Lamed, he will have Siyata Deshmaya to learn and to teach. But halomed amanas lasos, if you learn in order to do, maspikim biyado lilmod lamed lishmar v'lasos. You get tziyat l'shmaya for everything. And as all the mefarshim point out, when it says lilmod amanas lamed, we're not talking about a person who doesn't intend to do what he learns. because such a person is a Rasha, he's a hypocrite, and he's not getting Siyata Deshmaya for anything, not for Limud Olamid. And we're talking about a person who intends to keep all Torah and Mitzvahs, but he has a goal in life. Some Mefarshim learn that his goal is he wants to be a Rebbe, he wants to be a Rosh Yeshiva, he wants Kavan. A Menashe Tikra Rav. I think this was written many years ago. In today's world, I'm not so sure there's that much Kavan involved in being a Rebbe and a Rosh Yeshiva. You know, they tell the story of a fellow was the we'll call him Mr. Cohn. Any Cohns here? Mr. Cohn was the president of the shul. And somebody had some business to do with him. Chaim Yankel's coming and he's looking for Mr. Cohn, but he got lost. So he sees a frum fellow in the neighborhood and he says, "Do you know where Mr. Cohn lives?" "So you're talking about Mr. Cohn, the president of the shul?" So he said, "Yeah, you mean that bum? That lowlife? That fool? What do you want to do with him?" "I have some business to do with him." "Well, good luck to you. You know, he lives down the block, whatever." Anyway, he still has a father, meets another guy. Yeah, that Zuliker, that Eisvarf, that no good Nick. Anyway, everyone has something worse to say than the other guy. He finally finds the Cohen, who knows what, you know. He conducts it. The guy's a fine fellow. He has no problems. He conducts his business. He has a discussion. Everything's wonderful. So he realizes that people have upset him because, you know, president of the shul. So he said to Mr. Cohen, "Listen, you're the president of the shul." So he said, "Yeah." He said, "Do you get paid for that job?" So no, it's a volunteer thing. "So why do you do it?" "I do it for the covered." But more than possible explanation, you do it for the covered. So even though it's not the highest level, but mitoch shelo lishma ba lishma, you still get siyata deshmaya. But amanas lasos is a higher level. So a shiv explained, based on other, and also on some of the Rishonim, on the Mishnah, that Lilma Manasseh Lamed is also a person who is L'Shem Shemayim. But the difference is, he has a particular goal in mind. "I want to be a teacher, I want to be a Rebbe." "Why?" "Because I want to spread HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah." That's very fine, very commendable, and it's worth Siyata Deshmaya. But the higher level is Lumen Anas Lassos. "I am a soldier. I want to do what Hashem wants me to do." Whatever that may be. You know, in Chavetz Chaim, we're very big on Abbas's Torah, but the Rishiva always says, but it shouldn't be Lumen Anas Lamed. It should be Lumen Anas Lassos. If this generation has a shortage of Marbite Torah, people teaching Torah, and I have the ability to be one of those people, so then that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs me to do. So then I'll do it. But not because I dafka have to be a Rebbe, I dafka have to be a Rav. I have to do Ratzon Hashem. That's Leches Bidrachav. That's what I'm here for. Whatever it may be. And that is the ultimate Madrega of Lishma. And if it means what Hashem wants me to do is to sit and learn my entire life because everything else is being taken care of, fine. Then that's what it means, Luman Anas Lasos. If it means to get involved in chesed, then that's what it means. If it means to make a parnasa and be a positive member of the community, so that's what it means. But every person has to assess his capabilities, his situation, his circumstances. What does Hashem want me to do? And that's Lilma Lamanas Lassos. A corollary of that is that whatever situation you may be in, there's something that Hashem wants you to do. I'm going a little over, I don't usually do it, but I want to tell you this story because it is a powerful story. I heard this from Rabbi Israel Tauber, and the story was about himself. And he makes the circuit, he speaks, and he's written some books, and he's a very interesting individual. He himself is a Holocaust survivor, came to America after the war, and was the Talmud of Rav Weissmandel. And he learned by Rav Weissmandel in the Nitra Yeshiva. He said, he got married. There were no paying kolos, or there were a little bit actually. Chavetz Chaim had started, and by that time, I'm not sure if Lakewood had started yet. There was about to start, but he was not too many paying kolos around. And after a year or two, he needed to make a parnasa. He went to Rav Weissmandel. "What should I do?" He said, "You should get a job." He said, "But I have a problem. Number one, I don't speak English, and number two, I don't have a driver's license. So there are very few jobs available. A person who has these two strikes against him." So the only job he could get was in the docks in Brooklyn, in the naval yards, unloading the ships with the longshoremen. So that's the job he got. I don't need to tell you that that is not, shall we say, the holiest environment in the world. So he found that there were pictures up on the wall that he really, you know, didn't feel was so appropriate to look at. And although he wanted to learn English, he wasn't necessarily sure that he wanted to learn the particular brand of English that he was hearing in the docks. And he was getting depressed. He said, here I was, learning in Kollel with such kedusha, such sanctity, involving myself in holiness, and I'm plunged into such an environment. The lowest of the low. And he got very down. He was depressed. Came back to Rav Weissmandl. So Rav Weissmandl told him and said, listen, first of all, you should enroll in a class and learn English. Second of all, you should get a driver's license. But third of all, if in the meantime you're working in the docks and with the longshoremen in Brooklyn, your job is to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim in the docks in Brooklyn. And you behave the way a Ben Torah is supposed to behave. And by that, you're serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because if that's the only thing you could do, that's where Hashem sent you. So then it's Lilmod Amanas Lasos. You're supposed to do what you could do in your circumstances. Wherever you are, you serve Hashem. So he got Chizuk, and he continued for several months until he was able to get a better job working in the docks. He said, you should know, after a little while, in my locker area, the pictures came down off the walls. People were watching their language in front of me, and it had a certain impact. They treated me differently than the others. And then he added, he says, who knows how many Jews were not beaten up by these longshoremen because of the influence that I had on them. But you never know. I don't know. He doesn't know what the impact was. But Lilmod Amanas Lasos means serve Hashem wherever you are, whatever you are, whatever your circumstances are. Kadosh Baruch Hu has something for you to do. And that's the ultimate level of Lishma, and that's V'shamartes, and Shemar Hashem, Lo Leches B'drachav Lishma, etc.